We have, since we started talking about correlations and regressions, and particularly multiple regression, made the distinction between descriptive research and predictive research. Now, both of them are tied to research hypothesis testing, because as a community, we still like literature-born, theory-born, a priori hypotheses that are then supported by empirical research. We like that combination. We don't really like throwing some shit together, getting some results, and saying what that supports theoretically. We like to have a beginning in theory and an end in saying whether that theory needs to be modified, tossed, or supported. Now, the notion of research hypotheses in descriptive and predictive research are importantly different. In descriptive research, what we're really interested in is completeness. We want to tell the story, the whole story. Not just one model, but typically multiple models. We want to talk about how this set of predictors relates to this criterion in all of its glory and all of its complexity. And so there are three basic ideas for what gives us a complete model. All predictors contribute. When that idea came about, it made sense. This made sense when we were talking about a model, that all predictors contribute to the model, and no predictor, if added, would contribute. And that was the definition of completeness for a long time. I have no idea why. We've known things that tell us that this doesn't make sense forever. We know that we can take two variables that are correlated with the criterion, correlated with each other, put them in a model, and because they're collinear with each other, neither one contributes to the model. We know that we have suppressor variables. We know all sorts of things that suggest that this part doesn't make sense. And so along came a third part that was added in. No predictor, if added, would change the structure of the model. And that takes care of the case where you add a predictor, and while the R-squared doesn't increase, that predictor doesn't increase the fit of the model, some of the regression weights change their value substantially, enough to change their interpretation. Now, these two can't coexist. Right? And so this is sufficient. When do you know you have a complete model? When there's no other predictor that could be added to that model that will change the model, the structure of the model. Because that's the other thing is we gave up, is we stopped concentrating on the fit of the model, whether R-squared changes or not, and started to focus on the structure of the model. Because the structure is what you interpret. If you have a model and you say, hey, I have a model with an R-squared 0.25, you're not done. What is that model? What are the predictors in it? Do they have positive or negative contributions, larger or smaller contributions? The fit doesn't capture the model. The structure captures the model. Make sense? And of course, we're supposed to be doing all of this based on theory. Which means we have to know enough about what variables have contributed to what models in the past and how correlated what predictors are with what other predictors, so that we can first ask, do these data make sense in the context of the previous research? And then ask the cool question that we're always in a hurry to get to, what have I added to that literature? What have I contradicted in that literature? What have I added in that literature? Why might I be allowed to go on? But it's all about completeness. And part of that completeness and part of this idea comes down to three things. One is the difference between bivariate and multivariate. The story that you get from a set of correlations is probably not the complete story about how those variables relate to the criterion, because you have to take collinearity into account. And that is the difference between bivariate stories and multivariate stories is collinearity. You might have extreme collinearity, where all the predictors are more correlated with each other than they're correlated with the criterion. And so when you put them all in, you have a model with wonderful fit and no contributors. You're smart enough to know that you would not interpret that to mean none of those variables are part of understanding that criterion. They probably all are. There's a difference between being part of understanding the criterion and having a unique contribution to a particular model. What's the difference? Hopefully it's embedded in theory. And then we can talk about completeness, and we can giggle about this, and we can point that this is about fit, not structure, so we don't really care, and we can feel all superior that we've captured this, which is what really matters, because it's really about the structure. And then we run not only face-to-face with collinearity, but with under specification. And whether under specification is limited theory, we don't know what variables need to be part of the model. Resources, we can't possibly collect enough data, or some combination of the two. Under specification is probably going to mean that every time we start jacking around with a model by adding variables to it or substituting, that we're going to come up with models that differ from each other. And that's why we come back to the need that all of this be research hypothesis driven. So that as a group, we are working towards a complete model. Now, it's true that people studying the same criterion variable have different amounts of interest in and caring for different kinds of predictors. And that's okay. Because we don't ever think we're ever really going to get a 752 predictor model that gives us perfect fit and perfect structure for any criterion. We know that. And we know that people who have almost nothing to do with each other professionally study the same criterion variable. And so they're going to build different models, and those models are going to agree and disagree and interplay and not interplay. But as long as we are tying what we find into the literature, as long as we are keeping track of what we support, what we contradict, and what we add to, the hardest part of the paper, the damn discussion section, we're going to have convergent research, programmatic research, and we're going to have good theory. Now, on the other side, the world is different. If you're in that 3-5% of the research that really has a predictive intent, because all you really care about is a good Y prime, the rules change. We're not interested in completeness. We're not interested in whether or not added predictors change the structure, because if we're really doing prediction, there is no interpretation. It is all about fit. What I want is the largest possible R square with the smallest possible number of predictors. And we can think about it as number of predictors or cost of predictors. Sometimes they're the same thing, sometimes they're not. Sometimes six cheap predictors cost less than one expensive predictor, and they do equally well. So parsimony gets ugly. Are you talking about countable parsimony or costable parsimony? Now, the important thing here is that this still ought to be based on research hypotheses. You still ought to have some idea of why what variables will do better than what other variables in combination in terms of maximizing R square and minimizing the number of predictors or cost. it still comes down to collinearity. Now here, collinearity is part of the problem. Because you've got to get around that collinearity. You've got to be able to tell stories about what variables contribute to what models. Over here, collinearity is a much simpler issue. What you're trying to do is minimize it. The less collinearity, the less correlated are the predictors, the more efficient is the set of predictors. Make sense? I mean, that one's easy. That one's easy. You still have underspecification. But now, underspecification is basically a cost issue. Over here, underspecification is an understanding problem. You don't really have the complete model. You don't have all the variables that if you put them in, you'd really have the model you care about. All right, two reasons I bring all this up. One, this is still the way most people think about descriptive modeling. You know it's true because most of the research that's being done, still on multiple regression, but very much on structural equation modeling and other kinds of path modeling, is model specification. Model specification is which variables have significant contributions and which ones don't. And as long as you're thinking that way, you're going to run into trouble. Because thinking that way treats collinearity as an efficiency issue instead of as an understanding issue. The second reason that I bring this up is that there are techniques that are designed specifically for predictive modeling, that are specifically designed to give us the largest possible R square with the smallest number of predictors. Now, they ignore cost. And so if cost is the real issue, and you only look at reducing the number of predictors, you might not come up with a best model even in a predictive sense if you're worrying about cost. The point is that these techniques, while okay for predictive, and the reason I say okay is that they don't converge nearly the way we would hope, but these techniques that are very, very useful when doing real predictive modeling can be incredibly misleading when you're trying to do descriptive modeling. Okay? That's the real take-home message about today's lecture. When we go through these automated modeling techniques, you got to remember that they are designed for this. And when we're trying to maximize R and minimize the number of predictors, that means we're trying to minimize collinearity. We don't care at all about underspecification. And when we're trying to do that, and then we take the model we end up with and treat it this way, oh my, how badly things will go. Okay? Now, there are times when some of these techniques, when properly applied, can be very useful over here. And I'm going to talk about those. And I will happily confess to using the hell out of them in those constrained, carefully selected ways. They rock. They can sometimes reveal things that you weren't smart enough to hypothesize about, or the literature isn't complete enough to lead you to. But they will be post hoc findings. They will be something that we got out of the data rather than got the data to test. You with me? And like all post hoc findings, they have to be held over here so we can figure out if they stink or not. Okay? We have to then make those the basis of the next layer of a priori hypothesis testing.